Welcome to another edition of the Speak It Podcast. I'm John Wilson, your host with Fire and Life Safety America. Don't forget that we are a full-service fire protection company. Fire sprinklers, fire alarms, fire extinguishers, commercial buildings, residential fire sprinkler installs. It's pretty much we do it all. We'd love to help you out as well. So if you're a commercial property manager, give us a shout. If you know of anybody that needs some help or needs a fire sprinkler contractor, fire alarm contractor, that's what we do. Love to help you out there. Have an awesome guest for you here. Jeff Walker, Director of Loss Prevention at the Omni Hotel here in downtown Nashville. It's connected to the Country Music Hall of Fame. We talk about his experience and his job here at both venues, the Omni and the Country Music Hall of Fame. He's currently with the Omni. We talk about his military background in intelligence and counter-interrogation with the Marine Corps in Iraq and Afghanistan. What's it like to transition into civilian life? His passion now with organization that he helps with in sex trafficking, that's really, it's like modern day slavery. So we had some tough topics here, but it's really inspiring to see how he's helped and how he continues to help people. Hope you guys enjoy this conversation, and at the end we talk a little college football. Imagine that, this podcast talking about college football or sports. As hunting season really opens up tomorrow, duck, goose, and we talk about that. So enjoy this. Welcome to another edition of the Speak It Podcast. Pretty excited about our guest today. Got Jeff Walker, Director of Loss Prevention here at the Omni, sitting with me. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. It's Football Friday.
Yep.
I got my Ole Miss shirt on, man. Excited about football. Yesterday. College football kind of officially kicked off yesterday.
Yeah.
A&M and Purdue and Northwestern, teams like that. So. But we were going to talk about that there at the end. So,
okay. Save the best for last.
That's right. The fun stuff. So you've got a big team to talk about. I got some fun stuff to talk about. So, but wanted to kind of help people understand how you got to the Omni and the Country Music Hall of Fame and how you got into loss prevention and things like that real quick.
Okay. So I retired out of the Marine Corps 2014, moved to Tennessee. Did a little bit of security work, some private investigation work, and then I got hired on at the Country Music Hall of Fame as the security director. Did that for a little bit over 2 years, and then I transitioned over to the Omni Hotel, where I am the director of loss prevention, and I have been here in this capacity since December of last year, 2017, and I was hired in August, so... A little bit right at a year mark now, and it's going well. It's a good job.
So people that have not been to the Omni and Country Music Hall of Fame, which I've been here seeing you, we're friends, and met you trying to do business with the Country Music Hall of Fame and such, and really, really neat place. When you were there, did you meet some cool people, some famous people? How did that, was that pretty neat?
It was very cool. Growing up, I listened to country music, and one of the things that I enjoyed the most about working there is getting to meet people that I grew up listening to, groups like Alabama, Charlie Daniels.
Alabama, that would be
Alabama's
pretty cool for
great.
Me.
They were probably one of the nicest groups that I've ever dealt with. Somebody that's been in the industry, in the business for as long as they have, they're very down to earth. I never met anyone that was rude or obnoxious or anything like that. A lot of artists get the rap that they are stuck up or got bad attitudes, whatever.
Right.
Never experienced that with any of the artists that I escorted.
Well, that was a few months ago, but I got on this Alabama kick from some of their songs, and I was pulled up on YouTube and just listened to them driving down, whether I'm going fishing or something.
Yep.
Song of the South and
yep.
stuff. Oh, man, it was great. I felt like a good Southern a few days when I was just on an Alabama kick. But you showed me that. They had a lot of their... what do you call that? Where they had a scene, not an Alabama scene.
They had an exhibit.
An exhibit.
Yeah.
Big word there.
So the way that the Hall of Fame does it, they have special exhibits that mm-hmm. they will do, and they'll trade them out.
Mm-hmm.
They had a Loretta Lynn recently. Little Big Town was another one.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Bryan. And they showcase older country as well as newer ones, and what you're talking about was one of the Alabama exhibit.
I thought that was really cool.
It was.
Behind the scenes tour with Jeff Walker. I really appreciated that. So, and Taylor Swift has something there. She has like a, not a school, but something like that where kids can kind of come in and see some of the technology and such.
Yep.
Can you tell us about that briefly?
Sure. When they built the Omni Hotel, they added on to the existing building for the Hall of Fame. And part of the new part they added, Taylor Swift Education Center, it's where either an artist can go in and Skype, whatever you call it, to a classroom,
mm-hmm.
or a class can come in there and Skype to an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Skype's not the right word, but I'm technically challenged, so that, we'll go with that.
Video in it or something like that.
Yes, so. But it gives the education department an opportunity to teach music.
That's really
cool. And Taylor Swift sponsored that, and that's why it's got her name on it.
Yeah, that's really neat. The Omni and the Country Music Hall of Fame essentially share a big, long hallway.
Yes, we are connected.
Retail and things like that. Yep. So, three restaurants that you and I've been to before. What's the Mexican restaurant right there by the Country Music Hall of Fame?
Bajo Sexto.
That's really good.
Yes, it is. It's a great, great restaurant.
Name a dish that's really good to eat there for people that are listening or come downtown.
My favorite are the fish tacos.
Okay,
They do a very good job. They have had specialty meats in there before. They've had duck,
mm-hmm.
but the fish tacos are the best.
Probably Pekin duck, not wild duck.
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going duck hunting to get the meat.
No, I don't think so. And then restaurant we ate the other day was
Barlines.
That was really good.
That's here at the Omni. It's in the corridor between us and the Hall of Fame. They open up at 11 a.m. and they close, I believe, at 2 a.m. But
2 a.m. Good gracious.
Yeah. So
what a cool setting. It's wide open. It's huge. Conversations aren't being overheard from people sitting beside you. It's really neat.
Good outdoor seating.
Yeah. And what did I have? The grilled cheese steak sandwich or brisket sandwich?
Yep.
Grilled cheese brisket sandwich?
I think that's right.
Oh, my gosh. It was incredible. So people need to try that. And the other restaurant that had the biscuits.
Kitchen Notes. Yep.
And that's on the other side of the Omni?
That's in the lobby when you come in the entrance to the right, far right.
Kitchen Notes. So what do they bring you, biscuits while you're waiting or something like that with jam, honey? What was it?
They have two choices of ham with butter or two choices of jam, and the biscuits are homemade. We have an awesome lady in the back that makes those every morning. And they are better than anything you'll find anywhere else.
Oh, my gosh. So, just recap the restaurants as we're moving on. Bajo Sexto in the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Yep.
You have a Barline.
Barlines, yep.
And you have the grilled cheese brisket sandwich, which is pretty awesome.
They have live music as well, playing on a stage in the afternoons and evenings.
That's awesome. And then you have the Kitchen Notes.
Yep.
With the biscuits. So, people come check out those biscuits. That's pretty awesome. I just want to, we talk about and talk to people at where they are working, paint the picture of why I should come here. Country Music Hall of Fame kind of, you know, sells itself. But what's there to eat, what's there to do, and walking distance in the air condition. It's still hot outside.
Oh, yeah.
So the scene. So, and you're loss prevention right now. Just real quick, what are some challenges with that when you have 24-hour service of a hotel like that? Any high points on that just to kind of share with everyone?
Yeah, so Omni is a great location. We any business is going to have security concerns, security issues. We don't have a lot of them here, but what we do have is what any other business downtown Nashville has to deal with. Homelessness, vagrancy. We have some issues with outside guests coming in and just, you know, having a good time. So we just help with that. And then the other issues are, I don't know. I mean, it's...
Got to keep your head on a swivel, right?
We do.
I mean...
Because being downtown, obviously, the Homeland Security, we work very well with them. They let us know if there's any concerns that they may have. We haven't had any recently, so that's good.
But we
try to stay focused, stay alert.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's almost like your job. You have to assume it's going to happen, when it's going to happen,
right?
Who's it going to be from, and how do we prevent it, like, all the time? You can't, like, let that out of your mind, I assume, at all.
That's right.
I just that's tough to do. When you get at lunch, you pull up your computer, eat a sandwich, read the news. Where's that last shooting? Where's that last homemade bomb? I mean, it's, like, all the time.
Yeah.
Is it going to be in your building? And you have to prepare for that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that. Just Country Music Hall of Fame, Omni, things like that. Just want to, once again, I use the word or the phrase, paint the picture for people that are listening. So let's get into your military service.
Okay.
So it kind of helped you get to loss prevention, security, things like that. Why don't you start with position in the military, how you got in, when you got in, time served.
Okay.
And we'll get into some critical missions that you were serving there in the Middle East, correct?
Yep.
Turn it over to you.
All right. So I originally joined the Marine Corps in 1993.
Okay.
Started out working corrections. I worked in the brig at Camp Lejeune. Interesting job. Had some interesting characters in there.
Camp Lejeune is?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Okay. Yep. What part of the state?
It's on the coast, almost about roughly middle of the state.
Okay.
On the coast. And then I transitioned over to counterintelligence and did that for the last 10 years, a little bit over 10 years of my career. Counterintelligence, it involved doing interrogations, investigations.
Did you start that on U.S. soil first?
Well, after I came back, I was in Iraq in 2004.
Okay.
I was in Fallujah. And then when I came back from that, it's a boarding process. So you have to go in front of an interview panel, and you have to be selected. There's certain criteria that you have to meet to be selected. But once you get selected, you get sent to the school, which is in Damneck, Virginia. And the school's changed a little bit since I went through. But once you pass the school, then you are credentialed as a counterintelligence Marine.
So in saying that, did people know your title, your name? How does that work? Do you go ghost for a while? How does that work with that position?
You don't. There are positions in that realm, but the typical Marine that is a counterintelligence Marine is still a Marine.
Mm-hmm.
They're classified as 0211, and they are still out. They get deployed with Marines. They get they go out with Marine infantry units.
Mm-hmm.
They get attached to them. So it's not like super spook or anything like that. They are still doing their job. It's just now they got another skill set that where they are the resident experts for counterterrorism, espionage, sabotage. So they are a advisor, if I can use that word, to the command mm-hmm. for the unit that they're attached to.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they do capture any bad guys, then they are the ones that are doing the interrogations, debriefings, things like that.
I assume you had to learn a little Arabic.
I know a little bit.
I forgot a lot of it, too.
But I've forgotten a lot of it as well.
Yeah.
But we are, we always have a translator.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay.
A Turk to go along with us.
Okay. I was going to ask that. Is that one of our guys that spoke it fluently, you know, a U.S. citizen, or that somebody that was willing to work with you guys that you guys believe that could go with you and speaking that, and you're sitting there saying something to him and the other guy, you know what I mean? If you're not
yes.
picking up everything they're saying,
yes.
I can only imagine how that could go.
We did it both ways. So when I was in Afghanistan the first time, we had a Marine that we found out was from Afghanistan, and so we snagged him and put him on our team, and he was phenomenal. And we got to be careful on talking too much about who helped us,
mm-hmm.
but him being a Marine, he was a U.S. citizen, but he spoke the language, he knew the culture, so we used him the first time. In Iraq, we had a lot of American citizens that came back over and helped us out, and then also we had same thing in Afghanistan, just those that came back, they wanted to do what they could for their country, they believed in what we were doing, so they helped us out.
Yeah, I mean, I can really only imagine from what they've been hearing for centuries, you know, from control. Now you can talk of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
I get a chance to vote and things like that. People don't relinquish or give some of those freedoms, but you're still trying to, like, guys, you do get a choice. And so I can only imagine trying to help people understand that you can make some decisions here,
yeah.
but you have to throw people out of power just to get there.
That's right.
So in counterintelligence, kind of helping us walk through, let's talk about maybe a first couple missions, like where were you, what happened, you're helping your team, your unit. Can you kind of help us walk through
sure.
Something that we get off the truck, we're on the streets with, somewhere in Iraq, what's that like?
Okay. I'll relay one story, Afghanistan story. Southern Helmand Province. Helmand is the province where the Marines did most of their operations at. We were down south, way down south, and we had a vehicle checkpoint set up. It was a dirt road out in the middle of the desert, and we were responsible for checking any vehicle that was going south to north. And we stopped one truck. Older male driving, had a young boy with him. Boy, if I had to guess, probably 8-9 years old, maybe. And searching this guy, we found a picture that he had in his wallet of another young boy that probably about the same age. And the backdrop is like an Olin Mills picture, you know how they do the backdrops behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the backdrop for this picture was the Twin Towers, and what we think, we couldn't obviously prove this, we think that boy is probably a suicide bomber, and this guy had probably had the other boy with him to do the same thing, coming from Pakistan. So that was a good catch for the unit that I was supporting.
So who finds that picture in his wallet?
The Marines did.
Right. And mm-hmm. so they bring this to you, and you'd pull him out of the truck and start those conversations.
Yep.
What's that like? What's the look on his face? Is this like, is he like trained to like not say anything? What's that conversation like, Jeff?
I don't know if they're necessarily trained for counterinterrogation, but questioning him, he was nervous. He was concerned, but it wasn't the concern of a father would have for a son. It was more concerned about him, what was going to happen to him. Whenever I brought up, about the boy, no emotion, no empathy, nothing. So that also told us that he had no connection to this kid. So we sent all the information up to higher headquarters, whatever. We separated the boy from the guy, took care of him. But we didn't have anything that we could really hold the guy on. Mm-hmm. A lot of suspicion. But he never gave us anything that we definitively could say, okay, we can charge him with this. Or, mm-hmm. We knew he was a bad guy, but according to the rules of engagement and the laws of war and everything else that we had to deal with, we couldn't do anything with him.
Yeah, that's got to be hard. You feel like you got something here. And that's extreme to hear that picture with that backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
To see that, I just, once again, I'll say this a few times, in this type of conversation, I can only imagine what it's like and what they think about the U.S. Yeah, we're in their country, but we weren't quite in their country as much until that happened.
Right.
As much, and if somebody's on our soil doing some of those things and we want them out, but still you're trying to help out a little bit.
Yeah.
So, name another one that comes up where, might be a little bit tougher, something like that happens, or you're sent out to a unit to infiltrate something that's potentially hot and heavy, you're trying to keep something from happening, or you're trying to catch that that big name guy, you're hot on somebody's pursuit, anything like that, that you don't have to share a name of the assailant, if you will, but
we had several targets that we were getting information on, and being a counterintelligence, we were also human intelligence personnel. So in the Marine Corps, that's a combined job. In the Army, they have two different job fields. In the Marine Corps, it's all one. So being human intelligence, we get information from talking to people. So we roll out, let's say we go to the market, and so we get out of the trucks. I've got my interpreter with me. We are walking around, and it's very hard to get people to talk to you because they know one, that you're an American, but two, there's other people around that will see them talk to you. So they're very reluctant. But you still put it out there, say, hey, you know, if there's anything you can tell me about bad guys, where are the guns at, that type of thing.
Now's a good time.
Now's a good time, yeah. So we did that a lot. Mm-hmm. And there are several times that we did that, and I knew I was talking to a bad guy. Mm-hmm. Just looking at them, they're the ones that when you walk into a cafe, for example, they're sitting in the middle of the room, everybody's around them, he's the center of attention, and that's the person that I want to talk to.
Okay.
So I walk straight up to him, and I start talking.
Really?
And there was one time that one of the guys that we were looking for was in one of those markets, and it was tense, but I didn't say it specifically, but I said, we're looking for so-and-so, and he knew so-and-so was him, and he said, okay, I'll let you know if I see him. Like, okay, thanks. And there were comical times like that, but we knew it was business as well, and we were getting him, and we did finally get the guy.
Wow. Yeah, I can't imagine you're doing that, and what if all hell breaks loose, and you said, like, that cafe, and, like, you walk in, kind of like a, everybody sees you two or three at, where just things would, your plan did not go as planned, if you will, and combat happens. Do you have anything like that you could share?
Yeah, so, normally when we're out with the unit that we're supporting, we may be in the middle of a housing compound, middle of a market, and get ambushed. IEDs, improvised explosive device, were very bad over there. So there were several times that we would capture a person, individual, and we would be talking to them right there in the house that we captured, and we would start taking fire. Mm-hmm. Happened several times. And the unit that we would be supporting would be the security element that we would have. So they would be engaging while I'm sitting there talking to the person we just captured, trying mm-hmm. to find out who are we fighting against, who's shooting at us right now, where are the IEDs at around us, mm-hmm. So we can avoid those. And that happened quite a bit.
How hard is it to stay calm? I mean, you've got... You know, because you're trying to do your job, but you're also trying to look for bullets flying past your face.
Sure.
You can continue to do your job. How to stay calm in the moment you're trained, once the bullet starts really flying, how is that?
It's very hard, but you can't let your emotions show. And what I was going to say was there was one time that we had captured a guy that we know had just killed Marines. And you can't let your emotions take over and just beat the mess out of the guy, torture him, whatever, to get the information out of him. You can't do that. And we didn't. Every Marine that I served with was phenomenal in the job that they did. I know waterboarding is a topic that a lot of people like to talk about and stuff. I never saw it, mm-hmm. never did it. Mm-hmm. And the Marines that I served with were top-notch professionals, and they did a very good job. Mm-hmm. The one instance that I'm talking about, and we got a little bit of information. We it was good. We didn't get all of it. You never do, but it was enough that we were able to protect some Marines. So mm-hmm. it was a good day.
That is awesome. And how long were you overseas during this time?
So we did 7-month deployments.
Okay,
I've got two to Afghanistan and one to Iraq. And I was also deployed on a MEU, Marine Expeditionary Unit, on ship. And that was in the Mediterranean. That was more, that was a very good deployment.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different countries, a lot of good food.
Yeah.
Got to go see some pretty cool stuff. Petra, Jordan.
Yeah.
If you've never heard about Petra, it's very cool. It's buildings carved out of rock.
Oh, wow.
And very, very old. And so that was pretty cool. I got to swim in the Dead Sea. I went to the River Jordan where Jesus was baptized. And,
that is neat.
So that was, we did a lot of work with the Jordanians, and good experience. But the MEU was a very good, we did our job,
mm-hmm.
but when we weren't working and we had time off, we enjoyed ourselves.
I would say so, and I would hope so. Did you meet any, whether it be George Bush or any Secretary of Defense while you were over there, when they would come and do their little handshakes and just check in on things? Did you see any of them?
I never got to meet any of the politicians, but the two people that I did get to see that I would count a better experience than meeting a politician, one would be Toby Keith.
Okay,
He came and did a concert for us in Afghanistan. And actually, I've got a good friend of mine that works for Toby, does his security. And so I got a picture of Toby in concert while he was there and sent it to my friend. And he got it autographed for me, so I've got that framed at the house.
No, that's cool. It is.
And it's funny. There's no correlation to this, but when he started singing the Taliban song, we started taking rockets. I don't know if the Taliban heard it and didn't like it, but I don't think so. But it was pretty cool because he had to stop singing, and when the rockets started hitting and when they stopped, he started back up. So.
Oh, my gosh.
And then the other one would be Oliver North. He came out, and he was this was when I was in Afghanistan the first time, came out to our FOB. He was with Fox News at the time. And I was able to meet him, got a picture taken with him as well. He's been one of my heroes for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we appreciate your service. I know that sounds kind of cliche, but like one of the reasons we want to have this conversation is kind of like to tell people what you know you go through, what's it like when the bullets are flying. It's not all roses over there. You know, I see the media talk about certain things. You take some things with a grain of salt. You're not going to. They can't let everything out there in the open.
Right.
You can't do that. Yeah. So it's really cool to kind of get some of those details and some of the, if you will, foxhole stories. So let's talk about transitioning to civilian life.
Okay.
Some people do it well. Some people not so well. How did you do it well? Because of the things you guys see that you know can't really talk about that affects so many. What was it like for you to kind of to do it well or well enough, if you will, and how's it not so easy for some not to do that from what
sure.
things they've seen?
Everybody has different experiences. And, you know, one thing I'll say, talking about the transition, there's a lot of times that civilians will come up to me, they find out that I serve, and they'll say, thank you for your service. If I could, I mean, that's not a bad statement. I understand where they're coming from, but I think for me, and there's a few other vets that I know, letting people know they're thankful for the sacrifices that were made, not only from the veterans' viewpoint, because there are a lot of sacrifices, but also from the families. My wife went through a lot while I was deployed, and she sacrificed and served just as much as I did.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good way to put that.
Yeah. And she... making the transition, I don't think I could have done it without her. Because, let's see, if I can remember how many years we've been married, 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
And going military career is it's tough staying married with everything that you have to deal with. And so I couldn't have made the transition without her.
Yeah, and just to that point, I mean, did you see a few of your friends get divorced during
that? Oh, yeah.
Really?
Divorce is high, and there were some guys that didn't get married at all, and I don't know if it's because they knew they'd be deployed or they couldn't find anybody that would be willing to commit to that, but
mm-hmm.
I got a real good wife, and I cannot say enough good things about her,
mm-hmm.
but she definitely helped during my career and after.
Yeah, it's... I can only imagine what the pressure is like for them because they want to see you. They need
mm-hmm.
your help. And, you know, females serve too, so husbands are
right.
at home.
Yep.
And,
yep.
You know, that's got to be hard, extremely hard, when you need physical help at home, emotional help,
yeah.
spiritual help. I need you here when I have a tough time, if you will. So, so in transition from civilian life, I mean, you're so focused on, one, surviving, focused on death, if you will, whether
yep.
you're trying to keep it from happening, or having to implement it, depending on operations, and now that's not even your role anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be extremely hard for some people. And
it's hard to let it go. It is. For me, and I don't want to speak for every vet, but for me, being a part of something where you know you have the opportunity to make a difference and you're serving something bigger than yourself is what I got out of it, the satisfaction that I got from it. Yes, it's fun. It's adventurous. The adrenaline is all there. But the fact that you're able to see that you're doing a very small thing, you're making a small difference, that meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And making the transition to civilian life, you don't get that same satisfaction. It's hard to get that same satisfaction. A lot of veterans go into law enforcement, or they go into something related to that. They go into contracting, where they go back overseas. Part of it, I think, would be the camaraderie and the satisfaction of protecting others, serving mm-hmm. others.
And not just American citizens.
Right. Yeah.
But people in the streets. Yes, some of them, the people in Afghanistan, you know, Iraq, may not want us there, but you can make tangible improvements and help kids with schools and not getting killed, or, you know, getting people to tell them, you need to put this bomb on to go serve your country at 9 years old,
right,
or whatever it is.
But most of the people over there were farmers, mm-hmm. Especially Afghanistan. Yes, they were born
sure.
poppy, and which contributed to the illicit drug trade.
Okay.
But for the average person, they were farmers, and just like a farmer over here, they just want to raise their family, provide for what they can, and raise their kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, well, Americans too, right? There's
yeah.
some things that... we'd like to live a good life and support our kids and
sure.
church and help them become good citizens. And there's these facets or cliques, if you will, that are still trying to create damage here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether the Afghanistan or U.S., people still want to hurt people and get something to go in that fashion. So you have some friends right now that are probably still struggling
yep.
with that transition and stuff.
Yep.
You trying to help them or...
We talk, stay in touch with a lot of the guys that I served with. And try to do what I can. You know, I've had friends that committed suicide, and that's tough because everybody knows that there are ways you can reach out to others, but just doing it is, and when you hear of it happening, you're like, why didn't they reach out?
Mm-hmm.
The statistic is 22 veterans commit suicide a day.
Oh my
and
goodness.
Some people say it's even 23. And it's a number to a lot of people, but when you've served and you know somebody that has committed suicide, that's serious. And it's tough. So, you know, if you're a veteran out there that whatever you dealt with, whatever you're dealing with now, if you think that it's too much, you need to reach out.
Yeah.
Find somebody, local church, veterans organization. Heck, you can even contact me. I don't know you.
There you go. That's awesome. Yeah, and we'll have your contact information, ways to get a hold of you. Almost coming up here soon.
Okay.
Is there any way, like Veterans Administration, or like we can do anything better to help some of them? Because I know they've seen stuff that's
that's
not
for a
normal.
Whole other podcast.
Okay, we'll discuss that. Get down a rabbit hole there. So
I will say that there are good organizations out there. I don't want to talk bad about any of them. But local churches, they definitely will be a good listening ear. If they're not a veteran, it'd be hard for them to understand what you're dealing with and what you're going through.
Absolutely.
At least, if nothing else, be a good sounding board.
Well, not a rabbit hole here, but was it American Sniper?
Chris Kyle.
Chris Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
Did he serve during the same time, or was he after you?
It was during the same time, but we never... were around each other.
Well, you look how that story ends, right?
Yeah.
He's trying to help people to keep his mind normal, because in what you've seen and what you've helped save people by doing certain things, he's not normal. But he's trying
to
help keep himself afloat by helping others, and then his life is taken by another Marine that's having problems.
Right.
And it's like this, you can't... you can help, sometimes you can't. But one thing we did this last spring, coached my son's baseball team, and there was a first meeting that was there. The commissioner for T-ball said, guys, we're doing our first VA baseball game. Who wants to, we're going to have all the VA members out there. We're going to do it in the courtyard, the VA in Murfreesboro. Who wants to be one of the teams that does it? I raised my hand real quick. It was really, really cool because it was really neat because our team and another team got to – bring some smiles, bring them, get them away from their rooms.
Yeah.
Some of them were in wheelchairs. Some of them were affected mentally.
Mm-hmm.
People with loss of limbs. And it was really cool. And we got some roses, Mother's Day. I got some roses for them. And then I had them take a rose out each veteran on our side of the field after the game. Small, I mean, itty-bitty small thing that we could have done. But there was one of them that played football at Alabama. And he,
Good school.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Roll Tide.
We're talking about that here in a few minutes. But I didn't mean to open up that can of worms. But, you know, he said the weeks leading up to that, I just want to go and watch a baseball game. And he did. And he threw out the first – there was a couple of them threw out the first pitch. And that was really cool to see our kids do that. And they were in the newspaper with the veterans.
That's cool.
Small, small help and change with them, just giving them some positive things. So – that's my plug there. You know, that's something local close to us. So,
cool.
An organization is really close to you, and things that are going on right now, we're talking the tough subjects here.
Yes.
Sex trafficking.
Yep.
When the first moment that you and I met randomly, we were talking about, you know, core values, how do you help, what are you trying to do? Let's talk about that.
Okay.
You know, we got some time on this. What happens is crazy. It's almost like slavery right now.
It is.
Our current
modern
slavery.
Day slavery. Yep.
So talk to us about that.
Okay.
And then get into that organization.
We'll talk talking about the transition where Chris Kyle, he was helping others to kind of help himself.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things with me, talking about job satisfaction, being able to give back, is I got involved with an organization called Rescue One Global. It's a local, Nashville-based organization, but they have international operations going on. And it's interesting because, you know, your last podcast, you had, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he gave the Edmund Burke quote,
yeah.
The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. If I could add to that, another quote by Burke, nobody made a greater mistake than he who did nothing because he could only do a little. Sex trafficking is one of the largest growing criminal industries in the world, beating out drug trafficking. And it's a huge, huge issue around the world. And you got sex trafficking, labor trafficking, where people are being held in modern-day slavery, and against their will, they can't get out of it. And it's growing more and more because you can sell drugs one time. You can sell crack one time, coke one time, but you can sell a person over and over and over. It's a commodity that just keeps going. So it's a large industry worldwide. And Rescue One is working here in Nashville, but they also have operations going in Thailand and Philippines where they're trying to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And there's other good organizations out there that are doing the same thing.
Do you know people, the Thailand organization? Anybody over there?
With Rescue
yeah.
One?
Or know some people that do?
Yeah.
Maybe shoot the podcast over to them, too, because we have some downloads in Thailand. Not sure who.
Okay.
Say hello if you want to continue to listen in over there. So that's
sure.
pretty cool. So maybe they're getting a shout-out for helping over there, too. So
yeah. And, you know, it's a lot of times the general public doesn't have a clue what's going on around
them.
Man. You know, they're more focused on, and it's not a bad thing, but they're concerned about their lives. How are they going to pay their bills, whatever. But when you really open your eyes and you learn about what is going on, you're like, wow, I can't believe this is happening right here. Missing children, kids that are kidnapped, runaways are a population that is in danger of being trafficked. So there's a lot involved in it, but it's a huge, huge issue.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it just how have you seen they organize? You said they kidnap people. What are they looking for? They're in Nashville too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that. How do they? I mean, are they organized? What's it like? Is there? I mean. I know you work with some people. I mean, they have emails set up where they're communicating with how their system works. I just don't know. And once again, paint that picture for us and how that happens.
So Nashville is one of the hubs since we have so many interstates coming in and out
okay,
of the city.
Yeah. 65, 24, 40.
Yep, yep. And so They bring these kids in, and it's girls and boys. It's not just girls, which is a popular misconception. They are brought in, and then they're taken out. And it's not the seedy part of town either. I mean, we have kids that are cases involving high-end hotels. There was a case recently down around Brentwood at a local hotel that there was a sting that netted several Johns that were buying girls and underage girls, and so it's not just the dark side of town. It's everywhere, and there's every part of society is involved in it as well. Preachers. Church leaders, as sad as it is to say,
absolutely,
it happens.
Yeah. And so, we look at what's going on with the Catholic Church.
Exactly.
And any denomination is not immune to people doing wrong things to other people.
That's right.
So, you know, clarify that. What about the repercussions and the what they do this, they get caught. I mean, they're not put in jail for 3 years and come back out and do it again.
Yeah.
What is the, do you know any time frames if they're convicted of this?
It's
we can look into that later, but just
it's hard to say because
penalties need to be stiff for something like this.
Right now, Backpage is probably one of the top subjects. The guys that started Backpage and ran it and everything, they're going through the legal system. Don't know what they're going to get. So it's hard to say. But you're right. It seems like that there should be, when you affect somebody's life like that, there should be stiffer penalties, but.
Well, you know, when you affect somebody like that, we were talking the other day how they'll dope up somebody to be dependent on them, and these people know what they're getting into or what they're doing, and then once they're out of that life, they don't. That's normal for them. It's hard to go back into normal life, just like the, you know, former vet, things like that. So a lot of details we talked about the other day. It's got to be hard. When you, like you said, affecting somebody's life potentially forever. That's hard to think of. It's hard to fathom.
And, you know, that's one thing I like about Rescue One. So they have a three-phase approach, which is not their own. A lot of other organizations kind of do the same thing. But they have a prevention department where they do trainings and awareness for churches, local community organizations, that type of thing. They got the rescue department. Which is what I'm involved in, where we help local law enforcement, passing information. If we get a tip, we'll pass it to law enforcement. Any information we get, we give over to them, help them out, and then the restoration department, which I think is probably one of the most important, because once we identify a victim, we are able to provide counseling, housing. We operate the only house in the state of Tennessee for minor girls, and it gives us an opportunity to have a place to put them where, after we get them, where we can focus on them and help them. What you're talking about, yes, they're affected, some differently, you know, and so we are able to work with them and hopefully help them work through what has happened.
Yeah, self-esteem, normalcy, the no longer depending on the drugs that were in their system and things like that.
I can only imagine the mindset on a lot of them, because I mean it's stuff that has happened to them that I don't even know. I've never had it happen to me. I don't know how to relate in that regards. I can relate my military experience, the things that I've done and I've seen, to kind of say, okay, yeah, I've been traumatized as well, but not in the way that you have. I don't want to minimize what they've gone through. But there are a lot of ways that we can help them.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so you've got a gala coming up.
Yep.
October.
It is October 9th at the we're at Millennium Maxwell House Hotel here in Nashville. Our website is rescue1global.org. And once you go to the website, if you click on the Gala 2018 tab, It gives you all the information.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to try to make it to that. So.
Reception at 6 p.m. We're going to have a marketplace, which we will be selling a lot of the products that we get from Thailand. Mm-hmm. They make clothes, beads, things like that, and they also have coffee from Thailand, which is good coffee. Mm-hmm. I know you don't drink coffee, but...
don't tell them what else I don't like. That would not be good for my image. Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, the gala is coming up. Just check it out on the website, October 1st, and get your tickets.
Awesome, awesome. Some serious subjects we talked about. We want to share and share about where you've been, how you've helped, what's it like for people coming out of the military to one of your passions to helping again at sex trafficking. Really affected people for a positive way. So now we're going to get into some lighter subjects. You are an Auburn fan. Let's talk about
whoa. That is wrong.
So when you told me I was a Mississippi State fan, that you said same difference. I'm like, so you're an Auburn fan, right? He said, no, the difference is we always win.
That's right. That's right.
And I said, okay, I put my head down and point taken. So
reigning national champion. So
that's like, speaking of cliches, that's like a repeat. Like, they won it again? Really? Nick Saban's won it 5 out of the 9 years.
He's good.
That's crazy. I mean, he's lost one Ohio State. Yeah. So they're crazy good. So they love paying players. Well, everybody has to pay players. So, tomorrow, football season is here.
Yep.
Hunting season's here. Dove, goose, man. Duck, everything.
Yep.
So... I'm not going to get out and hunt tomorrow. I'm going to be doing some yard work, get ready for my football game. So you going to do a little hunt tomorrow?
I'm going to try to do some goose. Where I live at, we've had several flights over, and I'm hoping to be able to get in on some of them, yeah.
Yeah, get a little goose on the grill and things like that. Cut them up thin, smoke them a little bit, very tasty. People do some different things with them. I like to slow cook them. Thin strips, though.
Yeah.
They could be tough. So,
yeah, yeah.
None of your kids are going out with you tomorrow, probably?
My youngest, he's the only one out of my three that cares anything about doing anything in the outdoors. He may go with me. I don't know yet.
Yeah.
If not, then I'll be by myself.
Which is not a bad thing.
That's not a bad thing.
I don't think people understand that even if you don't catch a fish, shoot a game, and yes, we eat our game.
Right.
It's a big deal. Get that quiet time.
Yeah.
When I go duck hunt, if I'm by myself, I get to sit and look at the stars for 15 minutes before the sun comes up and get just that peace. Hear the animals wake up. They don't know you're there. It's that peaceful time that you got to have to check out when you get away from people, concrete, asphalt, that daily grind.
And that definitely helped with my transition from military, from my deployments and everything as well. That was my release. I'm not a big drinker. I'm not into partying. I'm not into any of that. Outdoors is my thing. That's that's my drug of choice.
Yeah.
So it helps out a lot.
Yeah, and people, I mean, they just think sometimes the wives don't understand that and stuff. You know, like, you can come with me, but they don't want to come with
you.
They don't. And you're still in bed anyway. So right.
Yep.
My two boys, 5-year-old and 2-year-old, they like to go fishing with me.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to see if Avery will go with me, my 5-year-old, go sit with me in the field, whether the gun's loaded for a dove or not. And but I think he'll be moving quite a bit where he wouldn't help out, you know. So it's that fine line. When do you take him? When do you show him that?
Right.
He likes to get up early. We go fishing. He's waiting on me before the sun comes up.
Nice.
Without an alarm.
Yeah.
He didn't want me to leave him. One time I left him. And because I told Aaron I'm gonna come back and get him. You bring him out there to the boat ramp. He was upset that I left him. I was trying to give him a little bit of extra sleep. Yeah. So
it's funny that my daughter, she'll be 17 in November. She used to go hunting and fishing with me. She used to be the outdoorsy person with me. She grew up, became a teenager. All that changed. Now she's in the makeup, and nothing wrong with it.
No,
not at all. But it's interesting, she met a young fella on her missions trip that enjoys hunting and fishing. And now she's talking about going hunting and fishing again. So,
see?
Yeah. So we'll see if that helps.
Natural time in life, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not looking forward to that where they want to hang out with other people more than they do. Dad, you hear about it. Hey, John, just wait for the 12 and 13. I'm not looking forward to that. I wanted to stay around and hang out. But I remember those times, so... But hey, she gets back to hunting or fishing. Yep. That's good.
Yep.
So y'all can connect.
He'll probably have to go along, which, you know, we'll see.
Right. He had to ring his deck. You'll be watching those two instead of geese making a move in the dark.
But I will have a shotgun with me, so, you know.
There you go. Where do you watch the football game tomorrow? Alabama.
I'll be at home.
Alabama and Louisville.
Louisville.
What do you think about that game?
You know, I don't want to make any assumptions.
What do you think about the quarterbacks? That's a big deal now.
That's probably for a different podcast as well. I will say this. If I have my choice, I would love to see Tua start.
Yeah.
Nothing against Jalen. I think he's an excellent quarterback. But I think that Tua, I would just like to see him start it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's more dynamic. But, hey, you know, you give him 12 games, you never know.
You never know.
He made some plays that night, absolutely. He gave him the spark. But you just don't know. You don't have guys who can respond when people get him on film and they're sending linebackers in different ways to help him throw an interception and bat a ball down. How's he going to respond?
Yeah.
I was watching the game the other night, the national championship game, the end of it, last few minutes, and I saw his interview afterwards. I'm like, man, they both seemed really mature.
Yeah.
But I was like, I bought some stock in him just from the way he handled himself in front of the camera. Really liked that.
I think they definitely increased the threat that Alabama, you know, puts out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say they're going to go a perfect season or anything like that, but the fact that they have two solid quarterbacks makes them dangerous.
It does, and I don't think some people don't know that now that there's a four game, you can play in four games and still redshirt.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Jalen Hurts is probably, he's got that in his back pocket.
I heard
if
that.
If he doesn't play, you know, he's more than four games, he can still win a national championship this year and still transfer and have 2 years to play.
Yep.
When he graduates, he can go wherever he wants to. Saban can't restrict him. So, hey, good for him.
Yep.
You know, I'm okay with that. He wants to play. He's got the skills. He's 26-2. So,
yep.
So football starts. Let's see. Auburn and Washington, big game. LSU, Miami.
Auburn who?
Oh, yeah. A little sister school's little bond down there just south of you guys. A lot of good football this weekend. What else? What else? Anything else?
Really, those are the only two important topics for me.
Well, yeah. And Ole Miss plays at 11 on ESPN.
Okay.
You got to watch that game first. So grill something good. Hopefully you'll be grilling.
I'll probably still be hunting.
Hey, what you think?
Maybe.
Well, at that point, you're going to have to go find the geese and sneak up on
them. That's true.
Not to give any two tricks out there. So
I'll probably be watching. Yeah.
There you go. Jeff, I really appreciate the conversations, friendship, kind of sharing what you guys went through, what it takes to live that life overseas, sacrificing your time and your family's time, and then helping out with the, excuse me, can't even talk here, the sex trafficking and what that's like and what people are going through. So hopefully have you on again.
Sure.
About how we're continuing to help and how other people get help those people. So they're in those situations or getting out of it. Like you said, the people don't really know about it. It doesn't make the mainstream media, but it's, like you said, modern-day slavery, if you will. And that's just hard to hear. So thank you. We had some tough subjects. We had some fun subjects, but I appreciate your time, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Talk to you guys next week.